The Weird Sisters stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement in the US, at home here in Australia, and all over the world. It is not enough to be not racist, we must be anti-racist. And we acknowledge that the problem is not isolated to America. We encourage you at home to educate yourselves on these injustices. There have been 437 Aboriginal deaths in police custody since the Royal Commission of 1991. There have been no convictions for these crimes. You can find resources and donation links on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Weird Sisters Podcast. Black Lives Matter.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Some topics discussed may make people uncomfortable. For fair is foul and foul is fair. On this podcast, we will definitely swear. A lot. Now round the cauldron go, trigger warnings listed in the notes below. Thrice and once the hedge pig whined, the cocktails cry, it's time, it's time.
By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Maiden, mother, crone. Plot twist, we're all the crone. The stories aren't all made up and the points don't matter.
Welcome listeners to The Weird Sisters, a podcast about the blurst and bizarre and all the things you were happier not knowing about.
Hello, team.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Ooh. Hopefully some resemblance of recording schedule.
Yeah.
We are back on.
Yay. We have returned.
Yay.
We didn't really acknowledge that because we partially pre-recorded the last episode ahead of time.
Yes.
But thank you for bearing with us while we cried and died for uni exams.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
We are here on the other side, alive and thriving.
Yep.
In stage 3 lockdown again.
But we passed.
Yes.
Woo.
Mate. Flying colours.
Yes.
Excellent work all around the table.
Big hand to us. Everyone applaud us, make us feel special.
Yes.
So we're back and we have decided to do something less traumatic than the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We thought we'd go soft and nice and talk about romance this week.
Oh, stunning and sexy.
Yeah.
Unusual romance.
Yes, unusual romances. But before we do that, we should introduce ourselves for any new listeners who don't know who we are or any old listeners who just don't fucking care. Hello, my name is Laura and I am the paper fuck tube you're about to learn about.
Oh, God.
I cannot wait. My name is Tay and I am the sexiest roller coaster you have ever seen.
Oof.
Take me for a ride.
I've talked about the sexy roller coasters of my youth before in this podcast.
Oh.
So I won't bring it back up again, but fuck, I understand.
And I'm your neighborhood friendly Manson girl, Lacey.
Aww, friendly neighborhood mm-hmm. Manson girl. That's nice. Right,
it's
who's first?
Me.
Who's first?
Your Manson girl.
Ooh. Excellent. All right, Manson girl, get on with it.
Okay,
tell us things.
So I've always been obsessed with serial killer romances, but particularly the people who marry the serial killer, you know, and while they're in jail, while they're being like convicted of like murdering all these women, they're like, that's the guy for me. I love it.
Yep. Just
a very strange romance. Yes.
That is
so
bizarre.
I wanted to pick out some of my favorites and share them with you all today.
Thank you.
Okay, so the first question we should try and answer is, why do people marry convicted rapists and murderers?
Yeah.
Why do people marry convicted
well,
rapists
to,
and murderers?
I'm glad you asked, Kay, because according to Sheila Eisenberg, author of Women Who Love, Men Who Kill, brilliant title, by the way, she spoke to dozens of women who had relationships with incarcerated murderers. And she found that there's like two types that have relationships with murderers.
Oh, shit. Okay.
The first type is those who fall in love with the actual person, believing they can see the true good side of them. You know, they believe that they're a good person and they're just, they're shitty circumstances, that kind of thing. And the other type is those who are drawn to notorious, like, tabloid headlining murderers because they are drawn to the spotlight. They want people to be shocked. They want the attention. They'll probably get their picture in the paper. They'll be on the news. They'll be interviewed. sort of they live for the attention.
Okay, so there's a there's a level of narcissism here.
But what both groups have in common is they truly, truly believe, despite all the evidence, that their killer is innocent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So they always believe that they're innocent.
So, that's like, so they think that they've been wrongly incarcerated or, you know, they've been framed, that kind of thing. To sort of, you know. So, we'll start off coming in big with Ted Bundy.
Yes. Starting off strong with Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
I never thought he was hot, but a lot of people do. A lot of people thought Ted Bundy is hot. I don't get it.
Nah.
No, neither do I.
No. Anyway, so Ted Bundy, who is an admitted serial killer, rapist, and necrophile. Let's not forget that one.
What a resume.
Yeah, right? Ted Bundy's sometimes in these, like, I've just Googled him because that's what I do. He sometimes looks like Willem Dafoe, and I think Willem Dafoe is kind of hot sometimes. But that fucks me up because Ted Bundy is not hot. Weird looking. No. He looks like a politician and I don't like it.
I think it's that wave thing that he does, like in that picture, famous picture. Anyway, so Ted Bundy married Carol Ann Boone in a courtroom in February 1980, which is while Bundy was on trial for the brutal rapes and murders of more than 30 women. Ooh. We think that everybody thinks that his count is much higher, but you know, they found 30. So not only did they get married, and you can, by the way, see that. There's videos on YouTube.
Is he in a jumpsuit?
Yeah, because he's in jail.
So romantic.
So romantic. So not only did she get married to him, she actually gave birth to his daughter, Rose Bundy, in 1982. Fuck. Now,
Oh, my God. So they had sex. So that's horrible.
Bundy wasn't allowed conjugal visits. But he bribed a guard to allow him to spend time with Carol.
That's what you call it, eh?
Yeah.
Spend time.
So on January the 24th, 1989, Bundy was executed by electrocution at Florida State. And Boone disappeared with Rose into obscurity, and we don't know where they are now.
Really?
Oh.
Fuck, I didn't know he had a kid. Oh, that poor girl.
I know.
That poor child. Oh. So that makes me very sad.
So they probably changed their name, but on the birth certificate, the last name is Bundy of the child, like official. Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that's not a particularly difficult, like, it's not an unusual name.
No. But,
Yeah. Like, if I came across someone called Bundy, I'd be like, huh, like the killer, and that would be it. I would never be like, maybe it's his daughter. Like, you know, I'd just be like, well, obviously they're not related.
All right. So next lucky couple is Richard Ramirez and Doreen Leoy. So
what the fuck? Someone got with Richard Ramirez.
Yeah.
No.
So dubbed the Night Stalker by the press, Ramirez was sentenced to death in 1989. On the charges that include 13 murders, 5 attempted murders, and 11 sexual assaults. He married freelance magazine editor Doreen Leoy, who'd begun correspondence with him shortly after his arrest. She'd seen him.
What the fuck?
Yeah, she'd seen him on TV. Quote, he's kind, he's funny, he's charming, unquote, she told CNN in 1997. Quote, I believe in him completely. In my opinion, there was far more evidence to convict O.J. Simpson, and we know how that turned out, unquote.
I mean, O.J.'s still a thing. Whatever.
Yep.
Okay.
She sent Ramirez over 75 letters over an 11-year period, and they were finally married in 1996 at San Quentin State Prison. So despite the overwhelming evidence of his guilt, she always believed he was innocent. And she also claimed to live a lonely lifestyle as her family, rightly so, broke off contact with her following the announcement of the marriage.
Shit.
And she was his wife up until 2013, where he died of cancer at 53 years old.
Till death do us part.
Being completely fucking shallow about it. Like, if we compare Ted Bundy and Ramirez, Ramirez is definitely the better looking of the two. But they're both fucking murderers!
Ramirez is a good time, but he needs to close his mouth, otherwise he looks like a jack-o'-lantern. He's got really wide-spaced teeth. Not into that.
Yeah, the first photo that shows up when you Google his name is not appealing. But then when you look at his cheekbones in other photos, you're like,
he's got a good jawline.
He's carved for the gods.
He cut someone on them. Fuck.
Anyway.
He does look like a jack-o'-lantern.
He does! Oh,
no. And I like jack-o'-lanterns, so.
You do.
Oh, they've done an American Horror Story with him.
Yeah.
What season was that? 50?
next one is Russian serial killer Alexander Pichushkin. He's also known as the...
All right, how do we spell that?
P-I-C-H-U-S-H-K-I-N. Became known as the chessboard killer, as his aim was to kill 64 people,
yes,
the same number of squares on a chessboard. He only...
We've brought him up before.
He only killed 48.
One of my segments.
So he got there. He's one of Russia's worst serial killers, basically. However, this didn't deter nearly 80 women who sent the serial killer letters in prison.
One admirer,
Natalia, was so good that she actually proposed. Natalia refers to her cold-blooded killer boyfriend or husband, who suffers from narcissistic personality disorder, by his pet name, Sasha. She recalls, quote, Sasha has created such a stir, not only in our country, but throughout the world. So I was very curious to know what he's really like, and it turned out he was not so bad as he's shown in the media, unquote.
He's not so bad as he's shown
in the
media.
I thought that her quote was going to be like,
count.
Yeah. I thought the quote was going to be, he caused such a stir in the country and in my heart. And I was like, holy fuck it.
Oh god.
But no, I just made that up. Hallmark. In my head. Yeah, exactly. Someone called him. Make that movie. He has a brooding fucking brow.
He totally does.
Heavy brow.
Heavy
so
brow.
So he also revealed, quote, I proposed to Natalia. It was spontaneous. She immediately agreed. Maybe if I was free, I would not have paid any attention to her, but she is ideal for me. I have been in here since 2008 and I need her. Unquote. What a prick. What a narcissist.
What the Yeah, right? So he's basically like, I wouldn't have been into her at all, but I got no choice, so now I am.
Natalia even has a tattoo of the man on her inner arm. If you just Google the tattoo, it's his face, and underneath it is a chessboard.
So she's a fan
Yeah, she's a fan of his work.
Well, she obviously thinks that he's done it then. Oh my god, she really does
Yeah, it's also quite an ugly tattoo. While she is desperate to have a baby with him, she says they have agreed for her to find another man to have children with because he'll be in prison until he dies. And Russian guards probably aren't, you know, into bribes as much as the American ones with Bundy.
Perhaps not. Oh my god. So when you Google Alexander Pushkin tattoo, there, if you scroll down a wee bit, there's a photo of a mirror.co.uk thing, Bride of Chucky serial killer, blah blah blah. When you click on that and Google shows you like related images, there's someone who's got a fucking full chess piece of serial killer faces. They've got like Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy.
Oh lord.
And
is Gacy in his clown suit?
Very bad. No, he's not. He's just in it looks like it's all their mugshots, basically. Okay. Fucking hell. Oh my god. What the fuck? Why would you want to immortalize this person on your skin? Oh, you're a terrible person. Fucking closing that right now. I don't want to look at it anymore.
So.
Oh, no. That's not even good tattoos.
No,
oh,
they're god, not.
We're
they're
getting
terrible.
Sidetracked. But they're really bad.
All right. Next one is Oscar Ray Berlin, a long haul truck driver who brutally raped and murdered three young women in 1986. Sentenced to spend the rest of his life on Florida's death row, it was revealed that he is a dangerous psychopath and needed extra security considering he was an escape risk. You know, excellent. This was the absolute ideal combination for Rosalie Martinez, a Miami socialite who left her high-flying defense attorney husband and their four daughters and traded in her Miami mansion and new Mercedes Benz to be the wife of a psychopath.
Why? What have you got to gain from that?
Surely not
a fulfilling relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Bored with their life.
Speaking of their first meeting, she said, quote, I felt an affinity for Mr. Boleyn. He was a 9-by-12-foot cell with just a desk, bed, and a toilet. I felt his isolation, his confinement, his loneliness. It affected me because I feel the same way, and it left me breathless. Okay.
That could also be the smell that from the true. Tiny cell what? That could left you breathless. But, you know,
now,
go off.
Their wedding, which happened in 1996, can be viewed on YouTube and should be viewed on YouTube by everyone. She married him. They read the vows out over a speakerphone in her apartment while she wore a wedding dress and held a framed photo of him to compensate for his absence.
I am looking at a still of it right now. What the fuck?
WeirdSistersPodcast.com
yeah.
for all these images and videos.
Martin has always claimed her husband was innocent despite his many retrials. They remained married up until his death in 2016. Now, because she was a high-flying Miami socialite, she had money, which means she bankrolled all his lawyers for all these retrials and put the families of the victims through absolute hell. She's a fucking terrible woman.
It's
actually the three mothers of the women who were murdered. They banded together and they went to every retrial of each other's daughters' court dates, and they all sat together in the court and held hands to every single trial and retrial. And there were three of them
each.
That
is heartbreaking.
So nine times these women went to court together to support each other.
Fuck that woman who put them through that. That's bullshit.
Oh, she
She's the worst so far.
Yeah.
Worst of all.
Yep.
Next is Philip Karl Jablonski. Jablonski. He looks like a foot. That's what I'm saying.
I'm Googling. I'm looking. Oh, he does look like a foot. He looks like someone...
Yeah, a bit squashed in the face, right? So he was convicted of brutally murdering five female victims between 1978 and 1991 because he kept being released. And he was a sex offender.
He's COVID.
That they kept releasing, and eventually he learned to kill his victims so that they didn't identify him.
Carol
Spadoni came into Jablonski's life after answering his Lonely Hearts ad while Jablonski was serving time for having brutally murdered his first wife. His pen name is Death Row Teddy.
Oh my god.
So they became
They
became pen pals, and then they got married. And following his release, they moved in together. So he went to her house. The next day after being released, Jablonski raped and shot Carol and her 72-year-old mother. So he killed her.
Oh my lord.
Jablonski died in San Quentin on death row in December 2019.
That's devastating. Mm. Fucking hell.
Lord.
No, I thought I'd finish up strong with Charles Manson.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Don't even need to Google. Yep, brilliant.
Manson girl.
So Charles Manson became known as the face of evil after the shocking Tate LaBianca murders in the summer of 1969. Yet for, this is a great name, Afton Elaine Burton, who prefers to be called Star, saw a different side of him, and they're engaged. She ran all his social media while he was in prison.
Of course she fucking did.
She revealed, quote, I'm going to marry Charlie Manson. I think he's the most handsome man in the world. Recalling the first time she saw Manson, she said, quote, I just thought he was the cutest thing. He probably asked me 10 times if I wanted to get married, unquote.
Yeah, is that including the fucking thing you carved on his forehead, you psycho?
Babe!
Choices! So these women! Make better choices!
So she actually shaved her head and carved a cross into her forehead.
Oh! That explains a lot about
her. So the couple were granted two visits a week at his prison, but no conjugal visits.
Thank fuck.
But what happened was he was 83 years old. And they got a marriage license, and they kept, like, she kept going to the prison, and they kept saying that he couldn't see her. So I think the prison was sort of like, oh, let's make sure that this guy isn't married in prison, because the backlash would be crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he actually died before they could get married. He died in 2017.
Yes. Yes, he did.
So, and then she went on to try and claim his corpse, because she wanted to put it on display, kind of like how Lenin is on display in Russia. She wanted to fully, like, do his body, like, stuff it, like, taxidermy it, and get people to pay to see it, which is weird. Oh. Very weird for her.
I mean,
she would have, and people would have gone, I would have fucking gone. Yeah. So, like,
I was just thinking, like, profit. Okay, fair enough. I can see that.
And they're all my lovely couples for this week.
Thank you.
Fucking wonderful. Amazing. I loved it.
Some sources. Rolling Stone did a great article on 10 most infamous murders who married in prison. CNN, Ranker, Listverse, and Murderpedia and Wikipedia. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wikipedia is always up
all
there.
The hits.
Bless them.
Saint Wikipedia.
Saint Wikipedia, indeed.
Amen.
I don't care that my uni refuses to acknowledge them as sources. It's where I initially get my info from, and then I go backwards and I try and confirm it. Fuck, yeah, that's a time. That upsets me a lot.
Like, how they're allowed to have a romance, but they've prevented somebody else from having one. Or a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. They've just, you know, destroyed some lives, but they get to have that little bit of happiness. I know prison is meant to be about reformation. I know that.
But those people were thrown away. They were on death row. They're not coming out.
Yeah. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. They should be, once you're on death row and, I don't know, fuck it, whatever. But fuck, oh, it's so upsetting. Why do these women think that they can, like, change him or that they're fine?
A lot of them's like, I can change him, which is a bit late for that because he's already on death row. But a lot of the women were from, like, abusive family backgrounds themselves. So I guess that's the ultimate abuser, really.
Yeah, there's a vulnerability there, I guess, that they can kind of prey on, which is awful.
But they're in control of that relationship.
Yeah.
Cause probably,
they might not have been in control had they had a normal boyfriend or whatever. Yeah.
Mm. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way.
That's
well,
me.
Fuck.
Yes.
Thanks.
That's wild. Wonderful. All right, let's keep this romance train a-rolling. Alrighty.
What do you got for us?
So, my hags, listeners at home, have we ever heard of object sexuality?
Yes.
Or objectum sexuality, as it is also known as, or objectophilia.
I like the term objectophilia. It's a good one.
Yes. So, if we haven't, objectum sexuality is the sexual or romantic attraction to a particular inanimate object. So it says what it says on the tin, basically. Someone experiencing such an attraction may feel intense feelings of love, arousal, or commitment for the object of their desires. I'm doing quotation marks.
Commitment.
Yeah, commitment is the, like, key word. Yes. And that is why it is not considered a fetish, due to the emotional attachment to the object.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. That's cool. Mm. And sad. Mm-hmm.
It's complicated, because... Yeah, I got a little, like, I dug deeper than just, like, the silly listicles I found on this, because I was like, what's here? Mm-hmm. So, objectum. Yes. Sorry, I'm buffering. I'm buffering at my own notes here. So they see themselves as equal to their partners. It's also kind of believed that these feelings are reciprocated by the object, so they see themselves as equal to the thing they're in love with.
Okay.
Which is on the same level that you'd hope to see human on human romantic relationships. So,
well, that's the thing.
There is,
that I guess, like, I'm most interested in when you first say this, because, like, I feel sad initially because I'm like, oh, you'll never be loved back. You won't feel a reciprocation. Like, that's where my mind goes, because I initially think of, like, say, fictional characters that I've been like, oh, I love this character so much, and then been like, well,
yes,
never gonna even meet them because they're not real. You're fucking weirdo.
They're not real.
Like my teenage fandom years sort of thing and been like, oh, they're not real. And then like that's what I've obviously like, because you know whenever anyone tells you about something, you try and sort of like put it in your own mind as like, okay, well, how do I relate to this?
Yes, so, how do I process this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm just like, oh, that's really sad. The, you know, Berlin Wall's never going to love her back. But she thinks it does. She's like, no, it does love me back. You're like, okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to say otherwise because I don't fucking know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So sexologist, I've practiced this name several times. Let's take it away. Volkmar Zygusz.
Of course, that's a proper sex therapist name.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe they're German. All right. Yes. So Volkmar, because I know how to pronounce their first name, so I'll say that. Or Volkmar?
Yeah.
You told us you know how to pronounce this.
This week on Pronunciation with Tay, the sexologist hypothesizes that society is drifting further into asexuality and that objectum sexuality is a form of modern neo-sexuality. So like neo-sexuality is like where sexuality is at the forefront of something. So it's like innuendo and... Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. It's I had a little bit of trouble like grasping it myself, but from what I understand, it is like something where sexuality is like the predominant theme of something. So it's like I guess if you are in love with an object, that is like a big part of your life is the sexuality around that object. Cool. I don't know.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Sure.
I mean, like if you relate it back to porn, for example, like film is not neo-sexual. But porn is, because it's the sexuality is the forefront of that type of film.
Yes. Actually, that's perfect. Thank you. Mate, uni degrees.
Hey!
So to quote Volkmar, the objectophiles aren't hurting anyone. They're not abusing or traumatizing other people. Who else can you say that about? Which I think is fair.
Yeah. Like, I love watching... There's like, some great documentaries on, like, dudes that fall in love with sex dolls in particular. There's a couple of them.
Yes.
And I love, like, I love those documentaries because I'm always like, I'm so interested in you. Like, I want to know more about you because there's always so many people who are like that. And obviously, like, the human form is easy enough. And it's something that you're meant to have sex with. And, like, everyone looks at them like their family's just like, oh, my fucking God, Gary.
God damn it,
why?
Gary.
Yeah. And you're like, he's not hurting anyone.
Don't bring her to dinner. Is she clean?
Your sex doll is not invited to business casual Christmas. Put her away.
I mean, it makes it feel weird, but it's not nasty, you know?
No.
It just makes you uncomfortable.
It's not, like, it's the thing. It's not hurting anyone.
It's not.
And I think it also is a fair point as we go into this list. Like, if no one's being harmed, like, people do whatever the fuck they want. Like, we've all been on Reddit.
We
know the weird shit people do.
Ooh, yep.
Poop knives, fucking coconuts. Like, there are far worse things to fall in love with than, like, your own Tamagotchi,
aww,
right?
Yeah.
Cool.
So, moving on. Mm-hmm. So, these objects can be anything. So, I've got two key, I want to say, case studies here that I've kind of thrown together. So, first, we've got Amy Wolf. You might have heard of her, you might not have recognize her name, but you will know about her once I tell you the story, if you have already. So Amy Wolf was only 13 when she found the love of her life, the 1001 Knox roller coaster of Nobles Amusement Park, Pennsylvania. In 2009, she decided to marry the ride and change her last name to Weber, which is the name of the ride's manufacturer. She's taking on the family name. So she sleeps with a picture of the ride above her bed and carries several nuts and bolts from the ride with her as personal keepsakes. Which is kind of sweet. Yeah. It's very Victorian.
Yeah, I love
it. Like a lock of hair and a necklace.
It's,
it's like her other half is, you know, off to war or something. Yeah, cute.
Yeah.
He is, considering some of the asses that he probably has to ferry around every day.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Quote from Wolf. I love him as much as women love their husbands, and I know we'll be together forever. I was instantly attracted to him sexually and mentally.
Oh, okay.
The neosexuality is coming in here because she says that first. I love him for the roundness of his counterweights at the top, and I love him for the narrowness of his jibs.
Oh.
I don't know what a jib is. I assume it's a part.
Kind of got me going a little bit.
But the narrowness of them must be extra appealing. Sad news, in January of this year, 2020, the 1001 Nox was dismantled and replaced with a new room.
What happened to her? Has she killed herself?
Yeah.
Is she
No. She's okay. There's a documentary currently on YouTube on the channel. It's called Only Human. It's a great channel. Has lots of really interesting little mini documentaries about people's lives. It's really, really good to deep dive, especially at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep because life doesn't matter anymore due to COVID.
Yep.
and it covers much of Amy's story, highlight of which is a tender, if not strange, moment where she shares with the ride, where she explains how she is intimate with it.
Please tell us.
And okay.
Tell us now.
So she does explain this in vigorous detail in the documentary.
And now I expect you to.
I will as well. So she does explain how when she is apart from the ride, she does still have sex with the ride, quote unquote, by herself at home. So she just jerks it so right to this roller coaster. Oh. It's a pirate ship ride, not a roller coaster.
Okay. Oh, I get more into it now. The more you talk about it, the more I'm like, I can see where you're coming from, Amy. Okay.
Yeah. So she says that when she makes love to the ride at home, she has the nuts and bolts around her, and she has the picture on the wall and all that stuff. She says that as she's coming to completion, she starts repeating, "I want your fluids, I want your fluids, I want your fluids."
Fuck.
And then she does get them in the documentary. So there is a moment where the theme park Nobles is closed because they're filming this documentary, and she's like approaches the ride, and she's very bashful, as if she's like seeing someone that she hasn't seen in a while. Aww. And she's like, "Oh, hello. Oh, hello." And she like starts like touching all around the side. She's like, "Oh, this is so lovely. You look so good. Oh my God." And then she, it's been raining, so everything is very wet.
Oh.
And she lays down on the concrete underneath the ride and like slides herself under like she's a mechanic on a little like wheelie tray.
Okay. Oh.
And she like holds on because there's like, I think it must be some part of the exhaust of the ride. And she like hangs on to the bars above her that are covered in grease, like black grease. And she gets it all over her hands, and she starts like pulling herself up towards it and like rubs her face in the grease and like sniffs it and like is like whispering sweet nothings to the ride. And it's very bizarre. I'm not here to kink shame anyone. No. You can do what
but
you like. She's not hurting anyone, but it is the most, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. It's so bizarre. And she's just like, and then she gets up and she's like covered in grease. Like her face is just covered. And she's like, she looks spent. Like they don't actually show her jerking it so right, but she looks like she's, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And she just,
I understand. Yes. I'm into it. I'm fully on board with this now.
it's, this documentary is excellent. It will be linked on our Facebook
page.
Please,
I must watch that.
So it's not just the 1001 Nox. She's also in a very intimate relationship with a stair banister.
Oh, that's okay.
This is a reoccurring thing. Many people that I've seen in these documentaries and case studies that identify as objectum sexual are polyamorous as well. Ooh. So there is like a, they like, I guess there's no real conflict between you liking a bunch of different objects because no one's going to get jealous, are they?
We don't know. We don't know whether they're not.
Fair. I don't know. I've never been in an objectum sexual relationship. That being said, she has said that she is not jealous of all the other people that get to ride 1001 Knot. She's super cool with it.
Okay. Well, fair. That's good.
And she travels. Before the closure of the ride, she would travel like 3 or 4 times a year to see the ride and ride it. And it was like a quite expensive trip because I think it was like very far from her home state.
Wow.
Yeah.
Couldn't you have fallen in love with something that's in your state? I don't know.
I guess. I don't know. It's bizarre too though because like there's another woman in the documentary who is also an objectum sexual, and the documentary kind of follows them on this journey, mainly Amy, like traveling to see the ride. And there is a very, very, I want to say even more bizarre moment as Amy is being intimate with the ride, where the other woman who's like just kind of pacing around next to the ride sees a fence
and
is like, oh, this is a sexy fence. She just fucking sits on the fence like pike side up.
Oh.
She straddles the fence.
Oh.
And she's like sitting there and she's kind of like supporting herself, but she's also not really. And she's like, oh, this is nice. And she like looks at the camera and it zooms in on her face and she's like, oh I'm feeling something. I'm just like, oh no, this is the poor camera crew. Like, it's so bizarre. But like, I get it. Do whatever you like to get yourself off if it's not hurting anyone. But you're just humping this fence in broad daylight. And the other woman is just fucking lubing herself up in this grease. And it's just the most surreal scene. It's so strange.
Oh, that's wonderful. I like it a lot.
All of that was filmed. Yeah, all of it was filmed prior to the Rise dismantlement. So definitely check it out. It's great just to pass 40 minutes. And that's case study one.
Oh, that's right. We have another one.
I've got another one because originally this is all I was going to do this story on. But then I got a bit deep and I'm like, no, I have to include Amy because she's very interesting and this is a very strange time. Anyway, so there's another couple I want to talk to you about. The man in question goes by Sal 9000. That's his online handle. Actually, he doesn't reveal his real name.
Mm-hmm.
He married the one, also back in 2009, a doe-eyed beauty who looked perfectly perky in her sexy skirts, never picked a fight, and always forgave him quickly. Her name is Nene Angasaki, and she's the character in the Nintendo DS Lite game, Love Plus.
Oh.
Yeah, so Love Plus is a dating sim, and dating sims are pretty much exactly what they sound like. So for those at home who don't know, it's a simulation game in which the player is prompted to interact with a roster of different love interests, and eventually they choose one to go on a date with, establish a relationship with. They're long, they're text-heavy, hundreds of different endings, objectives, and relationship trees. I cannot imagine the time that goes into designing them. It's insane. But there's a massive market for them.
Oh, yeah.
And this game and many others, originally they're mainly localized to Japan. However, there's a large number that have been translated into English, as well as a number of Western-produced titles. So just recommendation lightning round, a few excellent parodies if you're interested. A Hatful Boyfriend, The Bird Dating Sim, Dream Daddy, where you play as a single dad who dates a couple of cast.
You can also date
dads.
A priest.
That one's very
big
good.
Fan
also
of Dream Daddy. There's also a monster one. Dream Daddy's amazing, and there's also a monster dating one that's by a similar company. I think it might actually be the same people, but it's also very good.
Excellent. I have to look that one up.
That's really good.
There's also the recently released I Love You, Colonel Sanders, the KFC dating sim.
What? Yes! Yeah. I definitely want to play that.
Yeah. All available on Steam. Highly recommend them in the world if you're still in isolation and need a little bit of love and affection.
Oh my god, these are quite cheap.
Colonel
Sanders
looks hot,
though.
Colonel Sanders looks hot, like a hot version. He could get it.
There is a fantastic comic that is on Tapas. I don't know if anyone else has got that app, but it's good. It's a really, really dumb comic that someone has made. I think they're from the Philippines, because there's quite a lot of Philippines companies referenced. That is like... Mm. Basically, they've made avatars of all the big companies for fast food, like McDonald's and Hungry Jack's. Well, they're not. What are they called? Burger King.
Yeah.
And Colonel Sanders and shit. And it's about all their, like, weird relationships with each other, but they're all very gay, and it's very funny.
I love it.
Oh, it's so good. Because they're a very good artist, but it's fucking stupid. I love it so much. I cannot remember what it's called, but if anyone wants to know... Send us a message on Facebook. I will link it to you. Oh, it kills me every time.
KFC Gajinka, I love it. That's awesome.
I have to buy that. It's really good.
Anyway, the object of Sal's affections, so Nene of Love Plus, is described as, quote, a third-year high school student working part-time in a family restaurant where the protagonist meets her. She is the dependable big sister from whom everyone can ask help. She enjoys horror films and housework.
Yeah.
So we can see why she's a catch, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's tailored to be a catch. Now, Sal and Nene's marriage isn't legally binding, but they did stream it online to thousands of people, and Sal said it was a way of him expressing his devotion to Nene.
Well, for one,
so he married his DS.
She's underage if she's in high school. Mm.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Third year, I think, is 18, I think. I think. I think third year is, like, the senior, I think.
I thought you...
Why am I justifying
it? I don't know.
It's a video game character.
Look, that's not the part I have a problem with. That's fine. No. But she's never going to get older. He is.
No, she's not. So the romance began a few months prior to the wedding, when Sal began taking Nene and his DS console out for walks around Tokyo. Oh. He even took Nene on a romantic beach getaway to Guam.
Oh, knows how to treat a girl.
Quote, yeah, I love this character, not the machine. I understand 100% that this is a game. I understand very well that I cannot marry her physically or legally.
Oh, bless you.
It's so... I don't know. I guess the key difference here between Amy and her roller coaster and Sal and Nene is that, to some extent, Nene can reciprocate Sal's romantic feelings.
In a way that we can understand, at least.
Yeah. Like, she's designed to do that. Like, that's the point of Love Plus. Pretty much any dating sim.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really bizarre.
That's so strange.
But
I love it.
I do too. I love it so much. Oh. Like when we brought up this subject, my mind instantly went to the dude who married his DS. I was like, yes, I have to find out how I can weave this into a fleshed out segment. It's very fun. Like I said before, these people aren't hurting anyone. They seem fulfilled, perfectly happy in these relationships. And they may seem strange to us on the outside, but, like, I guess if, again, they're happy, all the power to them.
Look, there's still places in the world where gay relationships are illegal. So,
oh yeah.
Look, fucking go have fun. Don't hurt anyone.
Yeah.
Love what you want to love. That's cool. But fuck, you're funny. God, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you so much for entertaining me this strongly.
Thank you.
Oh.
All right, bonus discussion time. If you found yourself developing an objectum sexual bond with an object, what would it be?
Oh. Amy's got me thinking about pirate ships pretty strongly. fuck, I've been writing a story lately about pirates. I'm very into them right now, and I've been watching Black Sails a lot. Very good show. If you haven't watched Black Sails, get on that. There is a ship that's docked near my house that is an old wooden... I don't think it's a pirate ship.
The Pollywood
side?
Yeah, the more I'm thinking about it.
I went on an excursion there.
I was very young. We stayed there for a week and had to work on
That's so cool. Oh, my God.
Kind of jealous of all of you because I'm thinking about that ship
I'm
pretty
strong. I'm jealous of staying on the ship, yeah.
But yeah, maybe the ship.
Okay.
I like that. That's a good answer. That's solid.
Thanks. Lacey?
So hard.
She's thinking. I've put you on the spot.
Maybe a library?
Ooh.
Yes, because there are people that have married buildings. There's someone who married the Eiffel Tower and the Berlin Wall, as we mentioned earlier.
I think there's... I can't remember if there's a couple, but I know there's definitely... I know of the women that have done that.
I know there's a woman who married a train station.
Oh.
Mm.
Yes.
I don't get what's exciting or sexy about trains, but fair enough. There's a lot of otaku in the world who are very into trains. So sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Library is also a very good answer.
Yes. I do like our state library, and I like a lot of the libraries that I've seen around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can dig that.
Just really sexy library. Just a really sexy
library. Give me an old daddy library as well.
Definitely.
I don't want these new fandangled ones.
Yeah. Make us a library dating sim.
Oh, yes.
The state library in there. Let's date the library.
What about you, Tay?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. I wrote this question out, didn't think about it at all for me, so I'm also on the spot. I could just be a cop out and be like just a fucking anime titty body pillow. Just something to hold at night.
Something to love. Nice.
I have a shark from IKEA, Blahage, that's very, it's very large. It's like probably a third human size to two thirds human size, depending on how big the human you're measuring it against is. And I got sent it very very graciously by some friends. Hello, Alex and Emma, if you're listening. last lockdown, because I was like especially sad because I was isolated from literally everyone. Aww. Like friends, you guys, Tim. It was really sad. And then I got the delivery dude rocked up, and there was a box probably like up to my like belly button height. Oh. I was like, what is this? What have I ordered in like a depression den that I didn't realize? And I cut it open, and this massive plush shark falls out, and I just burst into tears at the front door.
You're gonna need
just
to.
Literally torrential streams of tears. So that maybe shark. I would marry the Blahaj.
You're gonna need to put up photos of him, please. I think we need to put up photos of all of our objectophilia objects.
Done. And you at home can reply with yours. We want to hear what weird thing you would fuck.
Yep, 100%.
Good job.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, I was just had lots of fun doing this one. My sources are Wiki. I've got coalregioncanary.com, mtvnews.co.uk, The Telegraph, psychologytoday.com, and cnn.com.
That was brilliant. Wonderful. And we really needed that fucking good time after last week's episode. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Keep the sillies rolling. All right.
Oh, bless.
Take it away.
yeah, I guess that does leave me, doesn't it? I've done one that probably anyone that is into all of this stuff has heard about before. But I love it. I love it so much. It's fucked up. And the sad thing is, unfortunately, that there's a lot of reciprocation in both of your stories, which is nice. There is not in mine. I'm sorry. There's some non-con, but
oh no,
it's not a living thing that's not consenting. So there's that.
Oh, it's not living.
Don't know if that's better or worse. I'm doing Alina Helen Milagro de Hoyos and Carl Tanzler, for those of you in the know. So we'll start with Carl. So Carl's a German immigrant. He's born in 1877, so this is an oldie. He grew up in Germany, and he really briefly actually lived in Australia just before World War I. So ties to us. he was eventually put in a concentration camp by the British military because German. World War I. So he was sent to trial by jail. I can never pronounce this word. I know it's jail, and I always go gale. Trial by jail in New South Wales. This is not part of the story, but it sort of just was like, okay, so this is who we're dealing with. So Carl decided that he wanted to escape. And he planned to escape by secretly building a sailboat with a man who came to be known as Niantikola Mantheria. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Someone fucking tell me I'm wrong. I try my best. Mm-hmm. But basically, he was born Aton Walther Florus Guth. And this man is one of the earliest modern Westerners to become a fully ordained Buddhist monk. So, yeah.
Oh.
And he confirms that the sailboat was begun to be built by he and Carl. He was very determined. He wanted to fucking get out of there, but he didn't, so that's fine. He just eventually was sort of like shipped back to Germany after World War I was done.
Okay.
Yeah, so determined, but not very good at executing his plans, as we will see. So he marries a woman in Germany and has two daughters with her. One of them unfortunately dies of diphtheria at the age of 10, so a bit sad.
Okay.
Tragic, yes, indeed. And at some point, weirdly enough, Carl begins to put out there that he is actually called Count Carl von Kossel. This is before he went to Australia that he began calling himself this, so he was always a bit fucking weird. he also told people that he was a submarine captain and a doctor. He was neither. He also wasn't a count. We know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in 1926, he emigrates to the USA. He goes to Florida.
No, of course.
So he's not a young man. He's not a young man when this happens, because he was obviously born in the 1870s, late 1870s. So he's in his 40s at this point. He does bring his wife and daughter, but then he bails on them and they just become estranged. Don't really ever find out why, but considering who he is as a person, probably pretty self-evident. So Kyle goes on and he becomes a radiology technologist at a hospital in Key West, Florida. So from his Wikipedia, like, because there's just some shit on there that I was like, I can't say this any better than whoever wrote this article has said it. So I'm just going to fucking word for worder because what the fuck? So during his childhood in Germany and later while travelling abroad to Genoa, Italy, Tanzler claimed to have been visited by visions of a dead purported ancestor, Countess Anna Constantina von Kossel, who revealed the face of his true love, an exotic dark-haired woman.
Right.
So, yeah.
Oh, no.
So Carl's gone and decided, fuck my wife, I'm not really that into this anymore. Or she's gone, get the fuck out of my house, one or the other. And he's struck off on his own. He's in Florida and he's working at this hospital. Enter Alina. So Alina is born in 1909. So she's significantly younger. She's 21 at the time when she met Tanzler in 1930. And he is 53 at that point. So look, no, I'm not even going to go there. Anyway, so she's a tuberculosis patient at the hospital that Tanzler worked at. Basically he saw her and is immediately obsessed, like instantly, like he looks up and goes, according to his diary entries and things like that. And the things he said about her later, he proclaimed her to be the dark haired beauty from these visions that he had of his great ancestor, Countess Anna Constantina von Kossel. Right. By many accounts, she is a local beauty. Like, she's very beautiful. So, and the photos of her look very pretty. She's a gorgeous woman. She comes from a pretty tragic family. Her sister had also died of tuberculosis, and Alina's husband had actually left her after she suffered a miscarriage. So at 21, life is already not great. Have tuberculosis, had a miscarriage, husband left you because of it. Dick move. Her other sister's husband was electrocuted trying to save a co-worker whose crane hit a power line during a construction job. Oh, so Jesus. This family's just fucked. Yeah, these poor things.
Misfortune.
Yeah. The family had been hit by tuberculosis pretty hard, and that was, at the time, pretty much like a death sentence. It was fatal to a lot of people that got it. But Tanzler saw Alina and told the family that he was a doctor. He's definitely not. And he tried to treat her with a bunch of super experimental shit that he basically just made up.
No.
Yep.
Where is your medical license?
The first thing you should ask whenever anyone offers to treat you for anything. So like x-ray and medical and electrical equipment, medicines, he just pumped her full of shit. He put her in all sorts of weird equipment. Anything that he was like, this will work, he did. He smuggled equipment home from the hospital into her house to treat her. And he showered her in gifts. Like, he gave her jewelry and constantly told her that he loved her. There is zero indication she even remotely felt the same. But you've got tuberculosis. Everyone says you're going to die. And this dude's going to pay for your medical shit. So,
nice.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Unfortunately, she did die. She died a year later at the age of 22. And Tanzler convinced her family to let him pay for all the funeral costs. He went elaborate as fuck and got a mausoleum built for her, which is, it's fucking huge. Like, it's over the top. But he was the only person with the key to it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this is the most morbid case of, like, sugar daddy I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so, fuck.
That's fucked.
Yes.
That's bad.
Yes.
It's bad. So he had her secretly embalmed. Like, he didn't fucking tell anyone. He just did it. He got an above ground telephone installed inside her tomb so he could call her.
Right. But she can't
questions. Answer. She's not going to answer, dog. It's going to ring out, dog.
That's what I was like. But
yeah.
What? Like, just get two tin cans and a piece of string and put one on the inside and one on the outside. Same
just put
thing.
A slot in the door and slide your letters in. Like, I don't.
I don't. Know.
I don't. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
He had electric lighting installed because he went to visit her every single night, so he wanted to be able to see. He said that Alina's spirit would come and sit with him when he went to her grave, and he would serenade her corpse with his favourite Spanish song. Apparently, she told him to take her from her grave.
No.
Okay, Carl.
No, she didn't.
No, she fucking didn't.
No, she didn't.
No, she didn't. So 2 years later, after her death, 2 years after her death, I just need to reiterate that it was two fucking years after she was deceased, he began calling friends and telling them that Alina had agreed to marry him.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. No.
So Carl carted her body home to his place in a toy wagon. He just fucking wheeled her home.
Oh, God, I can picture it. That's brilliant. Yeah. That's a good mental image.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. At this point, Tanzla is living in Alina's airship, which was an airship that he was refitting. He wanted radiation from outer space to revitalize her tissue and bring her back to life. So he genuinely wanted to make this airship work to take her to space. So he was living in it because he didn't have a house anymore because he'd been fired from the hospital for some strange reason.
Oh, who knew?
Who knew?
Didn't see that coming.
Nah, fuck no. So, you know, fucking Carl's going heavy off the deep end. At this point, now he's got Alina at home. He decides to use piano wire to keep her bones together. Using her own hair, he makes her a wig because her scalp's decaying and the hair's falling apart. He takes out her eyes and gives her glass ones. Her skin's decomposing, naturally, as you do after 2 years of being fucking dead. So he replaces it with silk cloth soaked in plaster of Paris, which, if you don't know, is like a basically just plaster.
It's paper macheing it.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
He decides to stuff her abdominal and chest cavity with rags. He dresses her. He spends quite a lot of money on dressing her. Stockings, the lot. He bought her new things. Not old ones, naturally. His new young wife needs to get her nice things. He played her music. He sang her songs. He had long conversations with her where he poured his soul out to this no longer even a body.
Just get a journal. Fucking hell. Fuck.
Yeah.
And he put her in his bed. Which...
Oh, no.
I don't like crumbs being in my bed, so I can only imagine how having a decaying body goes down.
Body crumbs.
Body crumbs.
Body crumbs. And he gave her a modesty curtain so she'd have some privacy.
Oh,
yeah. he uses perfume and disinfectant and preserving agents to make the odour, you know, less odorous and to delay the inevitable of decay. And here's where I come in. He inserts a paper suit tube inside her so he can have sex with her.
Paper!
Paper. That sounds like a bad fucking time, but I guess if I guess if there's juices soaking it, it's soft.
Ooh!
Fuck.
No! Oh, no.
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, no!
Yeah, it's bad. No one can confirm whether or not he had sex with a tube. But it's... A lot of people.
He had
like,
sex with the chick.
Why else would you put it in there?
Yeah. Why else would you insert? I'm just imagining like literally like a paper towel roll, like a tube.
Thank you.
And he's just trying to shove it up there. Oh Lord. Oh God. Oh.
That hurts.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
No, I don't like thinking about it at all. Really, fucking no.
I can't think of anything else now.
Oh,
moving on. Moving on.
No.
Quickly from the paper tube.
Anyway. Yes. A lot of people say that about me. Moving on. So Alina's sister heard that Tanzla was sleeping with Alina's corpse. From who? Who fucking knew about this?
Yeah. Did he spread the rumour?
Yeah. Friends are obviously like, so Carl fucking called me and said he got married to that girl that died 2 years ago. But anyway, so she goes to his house, forces her way in. And finds what she thinks is a super creepy doll of Alina. Oh no, it is her corpse, which they discover after the police get there, not before. He had been spotted dancing with it in front of his window.
Oh.
He was arrested, naturally, thank fuck, but found to be mentally competent to stand trial. Basically for the charge of wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave and removing a body without authorization. But The case was dropped because the statute of limitations expired.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, and we'll find out fucking how it expired because he had her for 7 years.
7 years.
That's 2 years.
Seven?
Yep. So she'd been dead for 2 years and then he had her another seven. So she's 9 years dead by the time that he gets arrested.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So he's in his, like, 60s at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. He's he would be 69, I think, by the time that he was nabbed for it. Yeah.
Fuck.
So, like, people were really sad for him. People were really sad. They were like, oh, star-crossed lovers.
It's pretty sad.
No. He fucking abused a corpse of a girl who didn't even seem to like him.
She was dying and he was paying her bills. Fucking
she's
hell.
She's less than half his age. Like, I understand. If you're with someone who's a lot older, that's fair enough. Like, daddy. But, this is someone that had no choice and he was in a position of power over her. He pretended to be a fucking doctor. There's a lot wrong with this relationship. It's not sweet. It's not star-crossed lovers. It's fucked up. He's a necrophiliac.
It's really fucked up. Yeah. It's really fucked up.
Yeah. Her body was subjected to fucking awful shit. After Tansler had her, she didn't even get to go and just be in a grave somewhere after that. She was taken and put on public display and, like, almost 7,000 people went to go and just look at her body and what he'd done
to it.
Why
was she put on display?
Yeah.
Why would you... I'm act shocked. I would probably go see
This is the thing. It's like, it sucks because you're like, I'm so interested. I want to see it. And then you're like, oh, that's kind of fucked up. It's like when someone's like, do you want to hold this fluffy baby big cat? And you're like, fucking yes, I do. It's a baby tiger. Yes. And then you're like, I shouldn't be holding this. This is not where this baby tiger is meant to be. I feel bad about it.
When was this, like, the 40s?
This would have been, like late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah, there's fuck all to do. Of course I'd go see a fucking corpse on display.
Yeah, like TV's just coming
around.
Fuck
all to do. TikTok didn't exist back then. What else am I supposed to do?
Exactly. People had only just, like, 10 years earlier seen moving pictures for the first time.
Yeah, that's
there's
fair.
There's nothing better to do. So, she's finally buried, finally, in an unmarked grave to prevent anyone from getting at her body. Carl asked to have her back.
The cheek of him.
Yes.
The bloody cheek of him.
And he gets real nice guy about it when people are like, no! When he was denied the body of Alina, Carl set off a bomb at the site of Alina's mausoleum as a way to show authorities that what wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave really looks like.
Oh, he is a nice guy. But
he is. If I can't have her, no
but
one fucking can.
Did he get booked for that then?
No, he died in 1952 at age 75. He died in his house.
They should have booked him for getting that, for fucking up the grave.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, just for bombing something.
Yeah.
Florida police, do your job.
He is Florida man.
He is one of the early Florida men, he is. So he had a death mask of Alina made and created an effigy. A lot of, reports around his obituary say that he died in its arms, but no, he just died before one of his organs on the floor. By organs, I mean like the...
I was going to say, that's pretty metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
just dropped a kidney and then died.
Well, he did have some famous last words. What he said, this is not the very last thing he would have said, but this is something that was said sort of close to the end of his life when people asked him about his relationship with Alina, his unusual romance. Human jealousy has robbed me of the body of my Alina, yet divine happiness is flowing through me, for she has survived death. Forever and ever, she is with me.
Oh. So,
yeah. Yeah.
This poor woman's soul.
Yeah, her poor family. Like,
yeah. Hey, our family too. Like, fuck me.
That's so fucking bad. So 3 weeks after his death, his body's found in his apartment with a life-size death mask-wearing effigy of Alina close by. His estranged wife had supposedly been supporting him in his later years, so that's a time. Poor her. Poor his daughter. Sad. But just to end it, there's this fucking... So there's some articles, and I'll quote them but like there's some articles, you know how on some articles there's Facebook comments?
Oh yes.
There's one that I found from a woman called Pamela.
Nice.
Ooh.
And there's a lot of comments, but one of them just really fucked me up. And Pamela says, "Love is beautiful, so few of us find it."
Fuck you, Pamela.
Pamela, did you fucking understand what this article was about?
Did we read the same article,
yeah,
Pamela?
What the fuck?
Have some fucking chill.
Dude.
Oh my god.
He basically has a child corpse. Like, she's an adult woman when she died. But fucking hell, that's so sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's...
Pamela would fucking marry a serial killer.
Pamela fucking would marry a serial killer. She probably fucking has by now. Pamela, calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
So my sources for this story, because that's the sad end, was a lot of YouTube. Ask a Mortician, who is fabulous, and we all actually watch her, I believe.
Yay!
Yep, she's wonderful. She's on YouTube. She does a really, really good cover of this. Would recommend. Obsolete Oddity is another YouTube channel that did a really interesting look into this. Wikipedia, as per usual, I also went to a KQED article and a couple of The Sun articles, because they had a really fun time reporting on this. Fucking The Sun. They just say some wild shit. But yeah, that's Carl Tanzler and his wife, who's not his wife. Poor Alina. No.
His victim.
Definitely his victim. But yeah, thanks for listening.
Oof. Thank you for the stories, Hags. Wonderful.
Yes, it's a good time.
But you're all feeling super romantic tonight.
Yeah. I liked the object stories best. That left me with a little flutter in my heart. Now I'm thinking about pirate ships a lot.
Oh. sexy hulls, sexy masts, starboard side. Delightful.
Love it. Well, unless we've got anything else to say.
We're spent.
Yeah, I got nothing else for you. I'm real sorry, but that was a lot.
You guys can find us on weirdsisterspodcast.com, all of our socials, all of our listening points. We'll be posting some cheeky resources from this week's episode.
Some lovely photos.
You'll enjoy that. Yeah. Also, we also have Black Lives Matter resources on our Facebook page. The Black Lives Matter movement is still very much prominent, especially to our neighbours over in the US. Despite what the media says, it is still going strong. So any of those resources, bail funds, charities, you have a spare dollar to donate in this trying time, we encourage you to consider it, as well as the charities focusing on our First Nations people here in Australia.
Yes,
definitely. Again, links to all of that are on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wizardspodcast.
Fantastic. Amazing.
No worries.
Love it.
Until next time, Hags.
Yeah, catches.
Bye.
Bye.